wish you were here. Darling, if you ever change your mind, you'll know just exactly where I'll be. Baby, if you ever change your mind, you'll know just exactly how I feel. Darling, if you ever change your mind, you'll know just exactly where I'll be. Baby, if you ever change your mind, you'll know just exactly how I feel. Previous program was the WBAI Evening News, heard daily at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Extinction Rebellion coming up. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
Listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the Rebellion. This is Extinction Rebellion Radio with Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane. Extinction Rebellion is a climate activism group with no hierarchy. With nonviolent civil disobedience, we pressure for a rapid transition away from fossil fuels to zero emissions, to stop the extinction of animals, plants, and yes, maybe even humanity. We are on WBAI Radio. WBAI is having its annual membership drive, and we do not exist as a program in this format without WBAI Radio. We ask you please to support WBAI if you possibly can. The way to do it is to go to WBAI.org and click on ways to donate. Now, this is listener supported radio. It operates on a shoestring budget. They use every dollar you give them. If you give them $100, they will use it and put it to excellent use. But $25 is all it takes to be a member for the year. With $25, you get an annual membership to WBAI, and you can give any amount that you are able to give. They will surely use it.
It sure will. So the Amazon basin might now be making our climate crisis a lot worse. That's the conclusion reached by authors of Carbon and Beyond, the Biogeochemistry of Climate in a Rapidly Changing Amazon. And this scientific study is the most comprehensive assessment to date of the Amazon basin's influence on global heating. So how is the Amazon making our climate crisis worse?
Well,
tuned for Extinction Rebellion coming up. Once again, this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the Rebellion. Welcome to Extinction Rebellion Radio, and we are very happy to have with us Zava Candler. Zava is lead coalition organizer at New York Renews, a climate justice coalition of over 270 organizations statewide. Thank you to Zaida Belendez for doing the work to set up this interview. And you are here as usual with the hosts Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. Zava, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me. My pleasure.
It's a pleasure having you on. Zava, you know, as we understand it, your main project right now is a bill before the New York legislature called the Climate and Community Investment Act. What does this bill do?
So the Climate and Community Investment Act, which we call the CCIA, fundamentally puts a makes polluters pay and takes that money and invests it in low-income communities and in Black and brown communities, while simultaneously tackling the climate crisis. And so this bill was drafted in consultation with environmental justice organizations, labor unions, more traditional environmental organizations, and other multi-issue community groups, with the intent being that corporations have been poisoning our communities for decades. They've known about climate change for decades, and they are the ones that should pay for getting us into this mess. And in particular, they've been the ones that that have been polluting Black and brown communities and low-income communities the most. And so this bill in particular invests the solution to the climate crisis into those communities.
Have other states done things like this? Or if it passes, would New York be out in front of other states, you know, by American standards?
Yeah, so it's a good question. So to take a step back, in 2019, New York passed the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, which was another bill. It was written by the New York Renews Coalition. And that bill set standards for economy-wide transition. So not just energy production, but also things like agriculture, transportation, buildings. And it did so with a 2050 benchmark, and it made it legally binding, as well as creating equity screens and job standards. And so that really put New York as the leader in climate and in climate justice in particular in the United States. But what is missing from the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act is a funding source to really make the vision that the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act into a reality. And so the Climate and Community Investment Act, it raises about $15 billion a year, creates about 150,000 good green jobs, and it would really set New York far and beyond as the leader in the United States. And while doing so, it would also really make sure that the federal government, which is right now, you know, exploring a number of different climate investments and thinking about how it wants to reach its own targets, it sets an example of how to do that while placing good green jobs as well as equity at the forefront.
That's fantastic. You know, those of us in California would say, well, we're the leaders. You're not supposed to be. You know, in what ways, if any, is CCIA aligned with the Biden administration's plan to address climate change? You know, in what ways, if any, does the plan go beyond the Biden administration's plan?
Yeah, so it's a really good question. So the CLCPA, the Climate and Leadership and Community Protection Act that I mentioned earlier, was actually the basis of a lot of the components of the Biden plan. And when Biden was running for president, a lot of the different proposals that he created with the Biden and Bernie task force drew from the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. And in particular, the part that calls for 40% of all funding to go to what are, you know, deemed as disadvantaged communities. But what the CCIA does that really goes kind of beyond the Biden proposal, especially the recent infrastructure proposal, is that it creates this dedicated revenue source that really is grounded with equity. And so, you know, we're seeing a lot of proposals right now on a federal level about how to raise money. And a lot of them are, you know, things like cap and trade, which California passed, you know, over a decade ago and was the kind of centerpiece of the failed Waxman-Markey bill, which was the last real federal opportunity at the beginning of the Obama administration. And what the CCIA does is it says we can still raise money by making polluters pay and by putting a price on carbon, but we can do that in a way that makes sure that disadvantaged communities are not going to bear the brunt really of that transition. And so with that, that is kind of a way that we want to be pushing the Biden administration as New York.
So to summarize so far, tell me if I don't have this right as a summary, but you're going to raise about $15 billion to spend on green energy, green jobs, climate justice initiatives, especially much of it in frontline communities. And that's there's a little bit more, but that's the fundamentals of what CCIA bill is trying to do. And you're exactly raising that money by levying fees on imported fossil fuels, as in fossil fuels that get imported into the state of New York. Is that right so far as a summary?
Yep, that's correct. There is also, if there is any fossil fuels extracted in New York, would also be levied. But thankfully, you know, due in large part to a lot of the hard work of environmental activists with the fracking ban, there is not a lot of extraction in New York. So it's mostly the fossil fuels that are being imported.
So to explore this, maybe even a little bit critically, importing fossil fuels and extracting fossil fuels is exactly what we have to stop doing ultimately. Right. So is this kind of, is there any way in which this locks in fossil fuel use? Does it put us in the strange position of like hoping that the source of our green funding, we would have to hope that the source of the funding goes away because we're getting the money from taxing, not taxing exactly, but levying fees on fossil fuels. So is there this weird incentive to keep on using fossil fuels under this bill? What do you think?
It's a great question. And it's something that we thought about when we drafted this. And so the way that we're combating that is that the fees that you mentioned, they go up over time. So it would keep us at about the same amount of money as we are transitioning off. So even though we're going to have less and less fossil fuel usage, the amount of money that we can have for investments will stay about the same. And then by, you know, 2050, we'll have no more revenue. And at the same time, we'll also have no more emissions.
So New York Renews issued a press release that said, among other things, and this is some of the stuff you've sort of brought up earlier. It says that the CCIA is estimated to create and sustain over 150,000 jobs over the first decade. It includes gold standard labor provisions such as prevailing wage, apprenticeship requirements, best value procurement, and community benefits agreements. People in frontline communities, women in non-traditional trades, people coming off of unemployment, and formerly incarcerated New Yorkers will be prioritized for hiring and facilities in environmental justice communities such as schools, childcare centers, and public transportation will be prioritized for investment. In addition, the bill bars revenue from the polluter penalty from being spent on police, prisons, or related infrastructure. I love that. I have to say that right now. Do you consider CCIA a reparations bill? And are there any sort of specific cancer alleys in New York that you all specifically seek to repair and redress?
Yeah. Well, first, I just want to say I appreciate you bringing that up because the intent of the CCIA is to make sure that the money that is raised, this $15 billion, it creates the economy and the world that we want to live in. And it doesn't just get us off of the fossil fuels while continuing to reinforce all the other systems of oppression that we have right now. You know, we don't want green police fleets, right? We want to ensure that money is actually going into our communities for things like parks and for things that are actually benefiting our communities. And so without a doubt, this bill is designed to invest that money in the communities that have bared the brunt of pollution for far too long, and also the communities that are going to be hit first and worst by the climate crisis. And so I think a great example is the Bronx. So, you know, the Bronx has some of the highest asthma rates in the entire country. And that's because of racism. That's because of redlining. And it's also because we have put so much of the fossil fuel infrastructure that New York City depends on in the Bronx. And so you're seeing just tremendous rates of asthma, of things, heart disease, and other public health crises. And so this money that the polluter penalty would raise would be prioritized for communities like the Bronx to ensure that these communities can really thrive. And that in addition to that, we know that right now New York has some of the highest unemployment rates in the entire country, that these communities have also been excluded from good paying jobs. And we want to make sure that they're first in line for the good jobs that will then build our renewable, our resilient, and our thriving communities.
You're listening to WBAI's Extinction Rebellion Radio, hosted by Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. And for today's show, we're speaking to Zaba Condler, lead coalition organizer at New York Renews. Now, as you know, we're in the midst of our membership drive. For just $25, not only can you become a full member of WBAI, but you can also keep alive radio programming that includes awesome interviews with climate justice activists, precisely the kind of interviews you won't hear on mainstream media outlets, because the programming on those outlets are often brought to you by the fossil fuel industry. WBAI is the voice of the people, your voice. So pledge now. Go to WBAI.org, click on ways to donate, and donate $25. Become a member. These are tough times, yes. So donate as much as you can afford and support the people's voice. Can I piggyback on that issue just for a minute there? Is there a way that you all are having conversations related to this sort of, you know, frontline communities and who's affected first that are actually global in perspective? In other words, I hear frontline, I hear first affected, and I think about the global South, and we don't have to get into any in depth around that, but it just strikes me as the always the elephant in the room.
Yeah, it's a really great question. And, you know, so on a personal level, I've also been involved in around some of the international negotiations, the climate negotiations in the UN spaces. And one of the things that is always true is that the United States will continue to block, you know, meaningful international climate negotiations, and will also, you know, really be seen as, you know, as the, like, if the United States doesn't cut emissions, then why should we cut emissions? And New York is well positioned to really show what the United States as a whole could be doing. And when I think about the CCIA passing, I think about the cascading effects that could happen. The CCIA passes, we have this truly monumental and groundbreaking climate justice legislation. It shows what the United States can do. You know, the federal government passes something that really draws on the CCIA and the CLCPA. That in turn shows that the U.S., instead of being an obstacle to change, can really be a leader in change. And that in turn can spur the kind of global emissions reductions that we really need. And that's what I wake up thinking about. And that's what I go to bed thinking about, because the CCIA really can have that kind of global impact. And we know that those communities, in the global South are already experiencing climate change and things like climate change induced migration.
There is redistribution in the CCIA from polluters to frontline disadvantaged communities. I mean, that's part of the theory of justice behind the bill, it seems to me. Okay, now tell us where we are politically. I mean, many folks don't follow state politics very closely, if at all. Where are we in the New York State legislative session? What are the political alignments around this bill and its chances of passing? And, you know, yeah, what's the timeline?
Yeah, so the New York State legislature started their session at the beginning of January, and the session ends on June 10th. And so we really have this small window now where the New York State budget is due April 1st. It is currently late, but it should be wrapping up pretty soon. And so we have about a little over 2 months from now to make sure that we can pass the Climate and Community Investment Act. And so we have a bill introduced in the Senate, as well as one coming soon in the Assembly. And it's going to be an all hands on deck mode for the next 2 months. And to prepare for that, and to really set ourselves up, starting next week, we're going to be having a huge week of action while both state and federal elected officials are on recess. And so this week of action, we're going to have something every single day. Starting tomorrow, we're going to have over 50 lobby visits from, you know, Buffalo to Long Island, having a kickoff call. We're having a town hall with Senator Schumer, as well as state legislative leaders, all really to show that this needs to happen this year. And we need to press our elected officials that the Climate and Community Investment Act must be one of the must pass piece of legislation for 2021.
If somebody's listening to the show and thinking, gee, this sounds good, I mean, I want to support this bill. It may not be everything solving the climate crisis completely, but it's a step in the right direction and they want to be part of supporting it. What would you suggest they do?
It's a great question. The first thing is to go to nyrenews.com, and there's a page there where you can see all the different coalition members. As I said, we have over 270 coalition members. And if you're, not currently involved with an organization, to join one of those groups and get involved. There are also a myriad of ways that individuals can take action, such as calling their local elected officials, and, numbers of different toolkits that we have on the website.
So about your coalition, New York Renews, R-E-N-E-W-S, when I say it fast, I thought I was saying New Yorker News, but no, New York Renews. Tell us, what is it? How is it funded? And what's the history of how it came together?
Yeah, so we started after the 2014 People's Climate March, which was unique at the time, not just because it was the world's largest climate march at the time, but also because it brought together types of groups that hadn't always worked well together in the past. So we had, large labor unions, environmental justice groups, more traditional environmental groups, community organizations, faith groups. And after, pulling off something truly extraordinary, a bunch of the leaders, sat down together and they thought, we should turn this into something that, creates real political power in New York. And so some leaders from New York City Environmental Justice Alliance, People's Climate Movement, NY, Align, they went on this road trip and visited 80 different cities and towns in New York and really talked to all the different community groups, talked to different folks that were doing climate justice work already. And out of that process and then, statewide convenings and conference calls, we formalized into New York Renews. And when we did that process, we drafted two pieces of legislation. We drafted the Climate and Leadership and Community Protection Act, which became law in 2019, and the Climate and Community Investment Act. So right now, that second piece of the legislation we're working on is really the second piece of the vision that we drafted, all the way back when we started. And so now New York Renews has grown into a coalition of over 270 organizations. You asked where we get our funding. We mostly get grant funding from, progressive leaning New York institutions or foundations.
Do you all have toolkits on your website for those of us who are interested in replicating your model?
Would you say the website one more time so people can find it?
Yeah, www.nyrenews, which is R-E-N-E-W-S.org.
I have two questions about where numbers came from. I think we have time for them because you've been so efficient in your answers. First, the $15 billion number, I think it's coming from, you can tell me if I am missing something important. I think it's coming from the figure of $55 per ton of emission. How did you come up with $55 as a price? I heard you say it's going to increase over time. Maybe the increments haven't been set yet. I've seen numbers in European Union countries charging $100 per carbon ton. Why? How did you arrive at $55 per ton for carbon?
Yeah, it's a great question because I think it reveals a lot about how we view, you know, a price on carbon. Mm-hmm. So we really view a price on carbon as a way to raise revenue. And then that kind of Green New Deal style investment that revenue that we can, you know, use that revenue for is what's going to get us to our emission reduction goals. We don't see the price on carbon as a way to, you know, shift the market that will then magically, you know, align the market forces to get us off of fossil fuels. We really see it as a way to raise a ton of revenue. So the way we landed on the number was, when we were starting out, we worked with the University of Massachusetts, and the Perry Institute, to think about how much money does New York need to invest each year to get us to the goals that we set. And we realized that we needed about $30 billion a year, and that about $7 billion of that needed to come from public investment. And so we then worked backwards and we thought, okay, how do we get $7 billion a year? And we thought, okay, about $35 per ton. And that was, you know, 5 years ago. And it's 2021, and the climate crisis has intensified pretty significantly. A lot of the science has changed. And so we last year revised the bill, and we jumped that number from 35 to 55 because we thought, sure, we can reach the goals that we set at 35 per ton, but now's not the time to just try to hit our goals. Now's the time to really be bold. And so we put the number up to 55, which would raise, you know, a significant higher amount of money, so that we can, you know, not just kind of meet our goals, but really exceed them.
We've been talking about the CCIA, or Climate and Community Investment Act. That's the bill you're working on trying to get passed in this legislative session. Now, 2 years ago, your organization passed a major bill called the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. And that one set a target of 2050. And my question is, why 2050? Where did that time frame come from? Extinction Rebellion sometimes has protests against 2050 targets, saying that that's way too long. So how did 2050 come to be the time frame? This is for the bill 2 years ago, not the current one.
Yeah. So, you know, when we drafted that piece of legislation, at the time, the kind of IPCC reports were saying that what we needed to do to reach 2 degrees Celsius as kind of the upper limit of warming was 2050. And the kind of Paris Agreement, which was just a little bit after when we drafted this bill, really set that as the goal. And then that's really what the science was telling us. And now, you know, I agree. This is the science has shifted. The climate crisis has intensified. And that, you know, as I was saying earlier, really played into, our decision, in regards to bumping up the amount of money, which would then, of course, speed up the timeline of the transition.
All right. So you're listening to WBAI's Extinction Rebellion Radio, hosted by Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane. And we're speaking with Zava Condler, lead coalition organizer at New York Renews. Zava, what kind of political resistance are you all meeting?
Yeah. So this is going to shock probably every single one of our listeners. but the fossil fuel industry is not super happy about this. We recently put out a report about the fossil fuel industry's lobbying as it related to climate justice legislation. And we saw that when we passed the CLCPA, that there was a huge spike in lobbying by the fossil fuel industry. And that comes as no surprise to us. No. You know, in Washington, there was a referendum to price carbon, and the fossil fuel industry spent about $50 billion in ads against it and eventually defeated
it. Dropping a bucket for them, huh?
Exactly. And so, you know, we already kind of seeing the resistance pop up and know that as we get closer and closer to pass this bill, that the fossil fuel industry is going to fight this tooth and nail.
Zava, we thank you for coming on with us. We're just about out of time. Is there anything else that you would like to add?
Yeah, I would just say that the latest climate science reports say that we have, you know, 9 years left to really, you know, truly shift our economy over. But that on a political timeline, we really have the next year, both in regards to federal action and in regards to really getting that jump start now. 9 years does not mean that in 9 years we will we can start this process. It means that in 9 years, we have to be pretty far down that path already. And for the CCIA, that next year really means the next 2 months. So I just urge everyone that is listening to really go and check out our website and the ways that they can get involved, because make it really easy for folks to dive in, kind of whatever your capacity levels are. And this is going to be a truly, nation and also world-changing bill.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.